Hey, all you Tolkien heads, I'm David Gaddy.
And I'm Jeremiah Orr from the Theonauts Podcast. And you're listening to the Secret Fire Podcast with your hosts, Michael, Micah, and Brendan.
Right here on the GCT Network, your Great Commission transmission.
Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the Prancing Pony in Bree, Middle-earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 14. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, we'll check in on Fatty Bulger at Crick Hollow, waste a perfectly good apple on Bill Ferney's nose, and get eaten alive by Neeker Breakers as we make our way to Amon Sul. We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire, each week here on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Gentlemen!
Hello!
How are ya?
Pretty good.
Micah, candy. Get the microphone a little bit, so, like, at least in your general vicinity.
Like this
no,
good?
Over
this
more.
Good? This good?
Yeah,
okay,
there we go. You guys excited about this chapter today?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
What are we talking about? What chapter?
Chapter 11, A Knife in the Dark.
A Knife in the Dark. Hey, what did we talk about last week?
Chapter 10?
Yeah, was that part two, or did we just do all of chapter 10? It was Strider.
It was Strider. We did all of it.
Wow!
Yeah.
All in one fell swoop. Do you think that we will be able to get through all of chapter 11 this episode?
Nah.
No?
According to you guys, no. But
no way!
I think we would manage.
So. Oh, Micah! You gotta stop and smell the Nika Breakers.
You should have been in the planning committee, Bo. Because I didn't read past the part where we said we'd stop.
It's jam-packed with stuff. Did any of you guys have anything, any addendums or afterthoughts or anything from the last episode?
Nah.
No? You got dialed in? All righty. You ready?
I'm going to be a mixture between laid-back.
Hey, yeah, this is our laid-back.
Laid-back show.
We just completed our other show, Finding Christ in Cinema, which is our lean-forward, intense. This one, we're on a sightseeing tour of Middle-earth.
Well, the stakes are still pretty high in this this chapter, though.
Yeah.
So we're not just sightseeing.
They're never going to subside, Brendan. If you're expecting a reprieve.
Not until the climax of the series. But
hey, let everybody know that we are streaming live right now on our Facebook page. If you're not a friend of ours over there, which we know you aren't, get over to facebook.com / Secret Fire Podcast. Oh, well, our Twitter account has 9,500 followers. Our
really?
Facebook page has 50.
53.
Oh, 53. Wow.
Don't discount.
Well, Facebook is don't facing discount. Out.
Yeah.
Well, that's
Tolkien folk, they don't like Facebook, and I don't blame them because I don't either.
Yeah, and I am one of them.
But it's a necessary evil. No?
Is it necessary?
No, it's really not.
Okay. We got a lot to talk about today. Long way to go and a short time to get there.
So just to remind ourselves of the ending of the last chapter, things are winding down at the Prancing Pony. Mary comes in. They finally found Mary. He was lost. He almost got taken over by a couple of ring wraiths. A couple of dark shadows.
Felt like he was under deep water.
The hobbits lay down on their blankets with their feet toward the hearth. But Strider settled himself in the chair against the door, and they talked for a while. And Mary still had several questions to ask. "Jumped over the moon," chuckled Mary as he rolled himself into his blanket. "Very ridiculous of you, Frodo, but I wish I had been there to see. The worthies of Bree will be discussing this for 100 years hence." "I hope so," said Strider. Then they all fell silent. And one by one, the hobbits dropped off to sleep.
Fitfully,
Strider,
do you believe?
Yeah, Strider. Well, Tolkien, with the Strider character, Strider is kind of like the punctuation mark of a happy night. And Strider's there to be like, okay.
Reality.
I hope we're alive in the morning to talk about this, is basically what he's saying.
No spoonfuls of sugar.
No spoonfuls of sugar. No. Chapter 11, A Knife in the Dark. As they prepared for sleep in Bree, darkness lay on Buckland. A mist strayed in the dells and along the riverbank. At the house at Crick Hollow stood silent, and Fatty Bulger opened the door cautiously and peered out.
Wait. So he left his station at the phone line for our backup
He did?
Phone line and went to the front door.
Look, I'm not faulting Fatty Bulger for anything. He's doing his job. He is remaining vigilant. You know what I mean?
He said, I'm not going with you guys on this adventure, but I'll stay here and keep watch.
I'll do
and
my
deflect
part
deflect mm-hmm. as best as I can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And doesn't he?
Yes.
Doesn't he? A feeling of fear had been growing in on him all day. A feeling of fear had been growing on him. I love that.
I loved it.
And he was unable to rest or go to bed. There was a brooding threat in the breathless night air. And as he stared out into the gloom, a black shadow moved under the trees. The gate seemed to open of its own accord and close again without a sound. Terror seized him. He shrank back, and for a moment he stood trembling in the hall. And then he shut and locked the door. Something wicked this way comes, I do believe.
I can hear the ominous music.
Yeah.
Just wafting its way through Crick Hollow.
Which, by the way, is that where we are, Micah?
No,
we're in the Prancing Pony.
Yeah,
we're the Prancing
That'd
Pony.
That'd be
okay.
Quite a run if I had to go.
That would be, yeah. The night deepened, and there came the soft sound of horses led with stealth along the lane. Outside the gate, they stopped, and three black figures entered, like shades of night creeping across the ground. One went to the door, one to the corner of the house on either side, and there they stood, as still as the shadows of stones, while night went slowly on. The house and the quiet trees seemed to be waiting breathlessly. There was a faint stir in the leaves, and a cock crowed far away. The cold hour before the dawn was passing. The figure by the door moved. In the dark without moon or stars, a drawn blade gleamed, as if a chill light had been unsheathed. There was a blow, soft but heavy, and the door shuddered.
Open in the name of Mordor,
a voice said, thin and menacing. At a second blow, the door yielded and fell back, with timbers burst and lock broken. The black figures passed swiftly in, and at that moment, among the trees nearby, a horn rang out. It rent the night like fire on a hilltop. Awake! Fear! Fire! Foes! Awake! Fatty Bulger, still vigilant. Fatty Bulger had not been idle. As soon as he saw the dark shapes creep from the garden, he knew that he must run for it.
Or perish.
It's life or death.
This is fight or flight.
Yes. Yes. And run he did. Out of the back door, through the garden, and over the fields, he reached the nearest house more than a mile away, collapsed on the doorstep. No, 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 he was crying. Not me. Not me. I haven't got it. It was some time before anyone could make out what he was babbling about.
Yeah, see, he's away from where the riders are right now. He is so terrified that he's just shouting out, no, mm-hmm. no, no, not me. I haven't got it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people are, what are you talking about? What is going on? And Tolkien's descriptive words that he's using, he is painting a picture that you cannot miss. We're here. We're in the action. That's what he's able to do mm-hmm. with these words, mm-hmm. is pull us right into this.
And even at the beginning of the chapter, he says, as they prepared for sleep in Bree, darkness lay on Buckland. So immediately at the front of the chapter, we're panning out.
If this were
a camera scene.
Yeah, it's very smooth.
Yeah, it is very smooth. We're panning out of the Prancing Pony and Bree, and we're shifting slightly over back to Buckland.
And even when
Zooming in on Crick Hollow.
Black figures enter the door, and you're like, oh no, Fatty Bulger, but then it cuts away and you know he's been running mm-hmm. away at this point.
A mile away.
Yep.
This is great writing. Beautiful.
Now I like this. We get like a brief little glimpse of history as to why this is important.
We got a foreword back many chapters ago when we were learning about the Old Forest and the mm-hmm. threats that had tried to come over, and that's what they built that well-tended hedge,
yes.
the high hay,
uh-huh.
as they call it, right? Well, and it's been, we'll find out, 100 years since anything like this has happened.
The Brandy Bucks were blowing the horn call of Buckland that had not been sounded for 100 years, since the White Wolves came in the fell winter.
The fell winter, the capital
fell,
F.
Fell, yeah, the fell that
is,
winter.
Yeah, that's one of those, everybody knows what the fell winter is, mm-hmm. or was.
When the Brandywine was frozen over.
Whoa!
It's pretty intense.
Yes.
Pretty intense. Of course, the chase scene goes on out, and then we're back to Frodo. We're back to the company. Frodo wakes up first. In the early night, Frodo woke from deep sleep. Suddenly, as if some sound or presence had disturbed him, he saw that Strider was sitting alert in his chair.
Of course.
Does he ever sleep?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
Probably not. We go down just a little bit further.
This, again, okay. let's talk just a moment about this dream. There's a lot of dreaming going on
in this story. Yes.
All along the way, and it's these premonitions and these flashes and these insights and all manner of, you know, all the things that dreams are famous for are being encapsulated by these dream sequences that Tolkien is sharing with us. I really like that. Frodo, it seems his dreams are all prophetic.
Yeah.
So there's something else we need to pay attention to.
Hey, there you go.
Yet another thing to pay attention to.
Yet another thing.
Yes.
Any part of the dream that stuck out to you?
Just
that it's there, and that it's prophetic.
Well, he woke up from this deep sleep suddenly as if some sound or presence had disturbed him. He is experiencing what's taking place in Crick Hollow right now. Mm-hmm. You know, he went to sleep again, but his dreams were again troubled with the noise of wind and galloping hooves. The wind seemed to be curling around the house and shaking it. And far off, he heard a horn blowing wildly. They are nowhere near Crick Hollow. They're not near enough for him to hear the horns being blown. He hears them in his dream. He is having prophetic dreams. Mm-hmm. These are insights. Perhaps Iluvatar is granting him these things. He opened his eyes and heard a cock crowing lustily in the inn yard, probably at the same time that cock crowed in Crick Hollow. Strider had drawn the curtains and pushed back the shutters with a clang. The first gray light of day was in the room and cold air was coming through the open window. As soon as Strider had roused them all, he led them to their bedrooms. When they saw them, they were glad that they had taken his advice. Why? The windows had been forced open and were swinging, and the curtains were flapping. The beds were tossed about, and the bolsters, are what you bolster up your pillow with. Mm-hmm. They go underneath the pillow. But we know, was it Bob that prepared their beds? And he prepared them with bolsters in order to make it look like bodies were in them. Bob or Knob.
I think it was Knob.
One of them.
I don't know. Yeah, it was one of them.
And so the bolsters were slashed and flung upon the floor. The brown mat. What's the brown mat? Supposed to be Frodo's hair, right?
Oh, yeah.
See, we're seeing this destruction, which in the films and in the 1978 animated feature of The Lord of the Rings, which that's another huge influence on Peter Jackson, obviously, was that 78 animation. They went to town on the beds, just as it's described in here, right?
Yeah.
So Strider immediately went to fetch the landlord. Poor Mr. Butterbur looked sleepy and frightened. He had hardly closed his eyes all night, so he said, but he never heard a sound. It's funny that Strider is awake and alert and in control with no sleep. That's a trait of Numenorean blood, I believe. These rangers, which are the high men, they are the last of the line of the Numenoreans, which we'll learn a little bit more about later on. They are a different kind of man. And we're going to remember that as you're watching Strider, Aragorn, in the text here, all throughout. He is a different kind of a man from any other man that we encounter, even Boromir. He's different even than Boromir. So here's old Mr. Butterbur. Never has such a thing happened in my time, he cried, raising his hands in horror. Guests unable to sleep in their beds and good bolsters ruined and all. What are we coming to?
What are we coming to? Dark times.
These are
said Strider.
Yes.
But for the present, you may be left in peace when you have got rid of us. We will leave at once. Never mind about breakfast. A drink and a bite standing will have to do. We shall be packed in a few minutes. And that's just a little forward to something just a few paragraphs down.
Yeah. Well, another problem in a long line of troubles. The ponies are gone. The horses are gone.
Oh, I was about to get to that.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about after that.
Okay.
But even still, that's important. Let's hit that next. Mr. Butterbur hurried off to see that their ponies were got ready and to fetch them a bite. But very soon he came back in dismay. The ponies had vanished. The stable doors had all been opened in the night, and they were gone. Not only Mary's ponies, but every other horse and beast in the place. Frodo was crushed by the news.
Just another... yeah. One more thing, another mm-hmm. shoe has dropped.
Mm-hmm. How could they hope to reach Rivendell on foot, pursued by mounted enemies? They might as well set out for the moon. Strider sat silent for a while, looking at the hobbits, as if he was weighing up their strength and courage. I wonder what that look would have looked like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ponies would not help us escape horsemen, he said at last thoughtfully, as if he had guessed what Frodo had in mind. How perceptive is Strider? Because this is one of several times in the past, well, since we've known Strider, where the text says, as if he were guessing Frodo's mind, or as if he knew what Frodo was thinking about. He seems very perceptive, and I think this builds us up to further in the chapter.
You know,
when they're actually on the road.
I could certainly go back to the last episode when we talked about Peter Crafe's assertion that Strider fulfills the king role of prophet, priest, and king, that motif mm-hmm. that we find in the scripture. You know, often Jesus looked and knowing what was on their heart, knowing what they were thinking, answering their questions that they're thinking within themselves.
But isn't that sort of a type of prophetic as well?
Sure. Sure it is. He's a special man. Just remember that.
Yeah.
I can't emphasize that. I can't overemphasize that.
Hey, there you go. But he says ponies would not help us escape horsemen. He goes on, we cannot count on getting anything to eat between here and Rivendell except what we take with us, and we ought to take plenty to spare. How much are you prepared to carry on your backs? Well, Pippin says, well, as much as we must. But then Sam says, I can carry enough for two.
Yeah, but see, I like Pippin said it with a sinking heart. As much as we must.
Oh, yeah.
But trying to show that he was tougher than he looked or felt. I can carry enough for two, said Sam defiantly. Because Sam, nothing's going to stop him. Nothing's going to stop him.
From protecting Frodo.
That was the commission that he was given.
Yeah.
Yes.
To be his paraclete.
Yep.
His pair of cleats. To help him dig into, yes. dig into that baseball field.
Yes. Dig in.
Can't anything be done, Mr. Butterbur asked Frodo. Can't we get a couple of ponies in the village, or even just one for the baggage? I don't suppose we could hire them. I mean, we might be able to buy them, he added, doubtfully, wondering if he could afford it. Well, I doubt it, said the landlord unhappily. Comes on down, there's nothing else left for sale. Where is it? Eventually, we do find out where the ponies were found. They went back looking for Fatty Lumpkin.
Yes.
Fatty
yeah,
Lumpkin?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. The ponies were looking for Tom Bombadil's pony.
They were looking for some refreshment.
Yeah.
Some safety.
Mm-hmm. And Tom Bombadil finds him. As a matter of fact, he came... Let's see, let me make sure... Yes, okay. Mary's ponies had escaped altogether. And eventually, having a good deal, this is on page 179, somewhere about. The Mary's ponies had escaped altogether, and eventually, having a good deal of sense, made their way to the downs in search of Fatty Lumpkin. So they came under the care of Tom Bombadil for a while, and were well off. But when news of the events at Bree came to Tom's ears, he sent them to Mr. Butterbur, who thus got five good beasts at a very fair price. They had to work harder in Bree, but Bob treated them well. And so, on the whole, they were lucky.
Yeah, no.
They missed a dark, dangerous journey, and they never came to Rivendell.
Okay, but Mr. Butterbird didn't know at this time, because he felt so bad for what was going on that he went and paid 12 pieces of silver, 12 silver pennies for this beaten down pony that was in the quote care of Bill Fernie. Bob came back with a report that no horse or pony was to be got for love or money in the neighborhood except one. Bill Fernie had one that he might possibly sell. Quote, a poor, half-starved creature it is, said Bob, but he won't part with it for less than thrice its worth, seeing as how you're placed,
not if I knows Bill Fernie.
Yeah.
Bill Fernie, said Frodo.
Isn't there some trick?
Wouldn't the beast bolt back to him with all our stuff or help him tracking us or something? I wonder.
This is important.
Yeah. But I cannot imagine any animal running home to him once it got away.
Remember that, listeners.
Mm-hmm. I fancy this is only an afterthought of kind Master Fernie's, just as a way of increasing his profits from the affair. The chief danger is that the poor beast is probably at death's door. But there does not seem any choice. What does he want for it? Bill Fernie's price was 12 silver pennies, and that was indeed at least 3 times the pony's value in those parts. It proved to be a bony, underfed, and despirited animal. But it did not look like
dying
just yet. Thank you. Mr. Butterbear paid for it himself and offered Mary another 18 pence as some compensation for the lost animals. He was an honest man and well off as things were reckoned in Bree, but 30 silver pennies was a sore blow to him, and being cheated by Bill Fernie made it harder to bear. Of course, that's where we get the backstory of Mary's ponies, or the Hobbit's ponies, actually finding their home and returning home to Fatty Lumpkin and Tom Bombadil and his care.
Under the leadership of Fatty Lumpkin and the care of Tom Bombadil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that, I mean, that's where we find ourselves right now. They had wanted to get up. I mean, breakfast at 6:30, Mr. Bomberbur, please. Butterbur, please.
Which, by the way, it's funny how Strider was like, a quick bite standing
and
we'll have to do for now. When just a couple seconds before the pony business, Mary comes in. There is one crumb of comfort and more than a crumb, I hope. We can have breakfast while we wait and sit down to it.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Da-do, 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 da-do.
Right?
Yep. I just think it's kind of funny. I can visualize, as Mary's saying that, he passes Strider a glance. Because they've got to stay at the inn for a little bit longer than they want to.
Yeah.
And Strider even calls it, we may have well just sounded a horn announcing that we're here.
Exactly.
So, no doubt
was their plan. With letting out these ponies and these horses, and all of that. In fact, then the patrons of the prancing pony actually start berating. I know I'm having a hard time with Englishing. giving Mr. Butterbur a hard time. He just parted with 30 silver pennies, which was a sore blow even to a man. Such as Mr. Butterbur. And he had other troubles, for there was a great commotion as soon as the remaining guests were astir and heard news of the raid on the inn. The southern travelers had lost several horses and blamed the innkeeper loudly until it became known that one of their own number had also disappeared in the night. None other than Bill Fernie's squint-eyed companion. Suspicion fell on him at once. If you pick up with a horse thief and bring him to my house, said Butterbur angrily, you ought to pay for all the damage yourself and not come shouting at me. Go and ask Fernie where your handsome friend is. But it appeared that he was nobody's friend, and nobody could recollect when he had joined the party. That squint-eyed guy looked half like a goblin.
Yeah, that guy.
Who is this guy? That's another mystery. Another mystery that won't be answered for a long time.
If ever. Does it ever get back to that?
I don't know, Micah. We'll find out. I can't say anything now.
True.
I'll tell you afterwards when Brendan is gone safely.
Oh, yeah, no spoilers. So, okay, so listeners, we've already established where we're going to end this episode. We're going to end it kind of a little bit, maybe like 60% through the chapter.
Maybe.
Maybe, if we even get there. But Michael and Micah have both said, before the mics were hot, that we find out what the knife in the dark was.
At the very end.
At the very end of the chapter, so we're not going to talk about it today. Let me guess, though.
Huh.
I just want to get it off my chest. I got to guess, get it off my chest.
Okay.
Was the knife in the dark Bill Ferney cutting the rope to a gate and letting the ponies out?
Fool of a Took.
No, okay, no. Sorry. Okay,
that's
sorry.
That's a bit harsh.
That's just me. That's just me. That's okay.
I don't have anything that's less
than... It was a good guess.
And we're back. Okay, all right. Well,
potatoes.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you. Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
If you thought of the movies, you would realize where this chapter is leading and...
You'd have
a better guess. That's okay. Good.
I need to rewatch the movie?
No, you don't.
Read the book first.
Read the book. Yeah. You got years to go until you can rewatch the movie.
Oh, darn.
Okay, so in the movie, it was close to 10 o'clock before they at last got off. By that time, the whole of Bree was buzzing with excitement. Frodo's vanishing trick, the appearance of the Black Horseman, the robbing of the stables, and not least, the news that Strider the Ranger had joined the mysterious hobbits made such a tale as would last for many uneventful years.
Where are you at?
I'm over here.
In the Kindle book.
I'm page 180.
Oh, okay.
But remember, I'm old, so I have the text blown up a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, well, in fact, most of the inhabitants of Bree and Staddle, and many even from Coombe and Archet, were crowded in the road to see the travelers start. The other guests in the inn were at the doors hanging out the windows. This is big to-dos. This is crazy. The events of the last night, the last 16, 18 hours or so, as a matter of fact, are crazy. Strider had changed his mind. He decided to leave Bree by the main road. At any attempt to set off across country at once would only make matters worse. Half the inhabitants would follow them to see what they were up to and to prevent them from trespassing. Mm-hmm. Could you see these people? Hey, that's mine. Don't step on that. Yeah. Hey.
Well, it's almost like we're getting this contrast of the people of Bree from what we saw that night in the Prancing Pony in the bar where things are lively, things are happening. But now, with the gray light of morning setting in on Bree, we're seeing a more rounded, a more truer
version
of natural Bree. A more natural, yes.
Or at least what we could say would be stasis, what they default to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and yes, that's actually a nice little storytelling.
Oh, thank you.
Storytelling word there.
Hey. They said farewell to Nob and Bob and took leave of Mr. Butterbur with many thanks. I hope we shall meet again someday when things are merry once more, said Frodo. I should like nothing better than to stay in your house in peace for a while. Talking about gracious words.
That's a blessing right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, that's something, I don't know, as a sidebar, I think our society is absolutely abandoning social graces.
Oh, yes.
Yes, you know?
Well, it's like Patrick Mead tweeted, you know, he found a problem with his open door policy. People kept walking in.
Yeah. So. Yes, social graces. I think that the hobbits are the best at that.
Oh, yeah.
I really do. So they tramped off, anxious and downhearted, under the eyes of the crowd. Not all the faces were friendly, nor all the words that were shouted.
But Strider seemed to be held in awe by most of the Breelanders, and those that he started to shut their mouths, and those he stared at shut their mouths and drew away. Talk about that powerful look he's got.
Yeah.
He walked in front of Frodo, next came Merry and Pippin, and last was Sam leading the pony, which was laden with as much of their baggage as they had heart to give it. That's compassion. I don't know what to tell you.
That is grace.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Isn't it, though?
I do believe so.
But it already looked less dejected, as if it approved of the change in its fortunes.
Stop.
Talking about the pony.
Yes.
Talking about the pony. Let's go ahead and... Never mind. No. Go ahead.
I love Bill the Pony. And I think that Bill the Pony is a wonderful character in the books. And we'll see. We'll hear more about him and this this relationship that is going to build between Sam and Bill the Pony. And already he's just been for how many hours? I mean, what is it? What, 10:30 right now that they're leaving? It's maybe been an hour or two that he has been in their care since the change of his fortunes that he seemed to approve of. And they are only going to load as much baggage on him as they have the heart to give. This really reminded me, Brendan, of, well, many things, but one thing is grace, the word grace, which we talked about a lot on our previous show, Finding Christ in Cinema.
It's a good word.
It's a wonderful word. And we just mentioned social graces and kind words and words and actions, right? That build up. A spoonful of sugar.
Yeah. It helps the medicine go down.
Yes.
A spoonful of grace helps the truth go down.
Yeah. And so this marked immediate change in the pony is a reminder of that, the patron society back in Roman days, which...
What?
Don't act surprised, Brendan. You and I are very familiar with it in this book that we both love and we both recommend that all believers read. It's called Misreading Scripture with Western Eyes by E. Randolph Richards and Brandon J. O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
A great book about encouraging us as believers here in the United States in the year 2016 or 17, whatever it is.
Wow.
17.
17. We're halfway through the year, Michael.
Come on now.
encouraging
us to reconsider or to better consider how we read the scriptures.
Mm-hmm.
It was written to people thousands of years ago, thousands of miles away, many, many, many cultures removed.
Mm-hmm.
Different people that had different mores, cultural mores, people that had different social graces, people that had a different understanding of the world around them and community and individualism and all manner of wonderful things.
Well, there were certain rules in place, and those rules
were
defined by relationships.
Yes, and they were many rules which we can appreciate even now. Are many social norms, many cultural mores are unspoken.
They go without saying.
They go without saying.
Yes.
Oh yes, but that goes without saying, as we would say.
Yeah.
It goes without saying, as we would say.
And we like to wonder why something may not be listed in the Bible, because maybe when the writer wrote it, it went without saying.
It went without saying. And one of those things is this patron society. Brendan, explain briefly what the patron society was.
Well, let's preface it just a little bit. Whenever you hear the word grace, what's the two-word definition that automatically pops
up? Unmerited favor.
There you go. When Paul was writing these words...
Using word terms such as grace and faith.
And faith.
And faithfulness.
He was, and acting faithfully and faithing.
Yes.
Because it's meant to be a verb. Let's be honest. Faithing. He was using them the way his society, his own context, his own community context used them, as economic terms.
Because that goes without saying. Because that's what he's talking about.
It was
an
industry.
We all understand what that is.
It was a patron-based society. So let's say that you are an artisan of some sort. You could either be a music maker, a candlestick maker, a bread baker, a something else that rhymes with acre, whatever. A back breaker.
Yeah, a kneecap breaker.
A kneecap breaker. There you go.
A kneecap breaker. What? I don't know. A kneecap breaker.
And you are so good.
You're a Guido.
No. You are so good at this thing that you have a patron that wants to back you.
Yes.
That wants to bankroll you.
That wants to protect you.
That wants to provide for you.
Amen.
Everything that we just said. You have a patron that wants to support you. And this patron, let's say you're a baker, because this was an actual profession back then. You know, not a candle style. I don't think they did.
They may have kneecap breakers.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I think those have always existed.
Yeah. But let's say you're a baker, and this guy, this very wealthy guy or wealthy family wants you to work for them. They buy you all the new equipment. They buy you the oven, which were big deals back then.
They pay for your certification, your license.
They house you.
Yes, your lease.
They feed you.
Yes.
They just let you live there as long as you keep making bread.
And they advocate for you.
They do. If someone ever asks, hey, look, I need someone to make some bread for me. Do you know anybody? Your patrons gonna be like, yes, I know a guy.
I know the best guy.
He is the best. Now
I've taken him under my care.
Yes, exactly. The unspoken rule, however, that went along with this relationship, let's say it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you as the bread baker, you're sound asleep with your family.
In other words, an inconvenient time.
It's an inconvenient time. And the patron has just had a surprise guest come in who's been visiting. It was unannounced, so you know the master didn't know anything about it. But your patron needs bread because he wants to show hospitality to this friend of his.
And you make the best bread.
He then calls on you to make that bread at that inconvenient time.
And what does the
client. Oh, the client does.
Gladly,
yes.
Joyfully.
Yes, he makes that bread at that inconvenient time.
Why? Why is he joyful? Why is he glad?
Because he is provided for. He is provided for so that now he is free to perform.
Ding, 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 ding,
the way
ding.
That he is called upon by his patron. Now, what does this have to do with grace and faith, you may ask? Let me tell you. When the patron provides, supports, advocates, defends, advertises, if you want to put that in there. That is called grace. Economically speaking, that is called grace.
It's an economical term.
Yes, it is an industry term. It's a business term. That is called the grace. It is the free, unmerited favor of the patron. In the Christian context,
he's God. Your patron because he chose to be.
Yes, he chose to be. You don't have any say in the matter. He chose to be it by his own decision.
Yes.
He backs you up. He defends, advocates. We've run the list. That's called grace. Whenever he calls on us, whether the time is convenient or inconvenient, whether it's going to move aside our schedule so we can allow for his, we're called to repay that grace by faithing, by having faith and expressing that faith. I'm not going to leak into, you know, work, save ourselves, because we can't do that.
This is
expressing
in response
your faith.
To yes. unmerited favor.
This is working out your faith.
Yes,
this is
that's what that
this
means.
Is pressing out your faith, and out of that should be the natural response to that grace.
Yes, it's you talk about social graces.
Yeah, exactly.
It's what you do.
Exactly.
That's how that society performed.
It went without being said. And we as contemporary Western Christians, we don't necessarily get that because we do not live in a patron society.
Right. We don't operate that way. We don't think that way because it's not our paradigm.
Yeah.
Right?
And real quick, before you go on to your point, it brings me to what N.T. Wright says. It was in one of his lectures at the C.S. Lewis Institute back in 2000 single digit. And he says, if you want to understand if you want to better understand the personal impact that scripture has for you personally, you first have to consider its own political context, its own intrinsic context. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
You have to understand
that. That's what we're saying.
And in order to understand the political, you have to understand the historical. It's this, you've got to do the groundwork. That way, when you read what the Bible says, you understand its context back then, how it related to the people it was being spoken to or the people it was being written to at that time. And then, if there's anything that you can glean from it personally, that's when you can do it.
Amen. I agree with that 100%.
So go on.
100%.
Go okay. on. With you. So what's your point, Michael?
My point is that now Bill the Pony has been shown grace.
Do tell.
Well, it just says it in there.
Oh.
I mean, you know, he approves of his change in fortunes. Why? Because he's not under the care of death.
Of Bill Ferney, yeah.
Bill Ferney representing death. Or
Fern
the
Billy.
You know,
Fern Gully.
Fern. Firm. Firm mm-hmm. Billy.
There you go.
I mean, he's terrible. In fact, Micah in Lotro, just the other day I was on a sightseeing tour to take some pictures for the show anyway. Mm-hmm. I had never noticed Bill Ferney's house.
Oh.
There by the southern gate. That's a nasty place.
It's pretty imposing, yeah.
Yes, and it's described as that. And he's got that big old dog in that cage on the front porch, and mm-hmm. and it's a rundown place, just as described in here. But anyway, so here is the pony, laden with as much of their baggage as they had the heart to give grace, but he's happy to carry it. How do I know that? Because he already looked less dejected, as if he approved of the change in his fortune. You know what? He's probably singing Psalm 116.
What does that sound
let's,
like?
Let's see how this song sounds. This is Thanksgiving what? For in the I'm sorry, in the NASB it has the heading Thanksgiving for deliverance from Bill Ferney. I mean death.
Get first out one. Of here.
Hey, look at it. It's in the NASB. I love the Lord because he hears my voice and my supplications. Because he has inclined his ear to me. Therefore, I shall call upon him as long as I live. There's the grace in patron society. Verse 3, the cords of death encompassed me and the terrors of Sheol came upon me. I found distress and sorrow. Then I called upon the name of the Lord. O Lord, I beseech you, save my life. Gracious is the Lord and righteous. Yes, our God is compassionate. The Lord preserves the simple. I was brought low, and he saved me. Return to your feet, O my soul, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you. For you have rescued my soul from death. My eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling. I shall walk before the Lord in the land of the living. I believed when I said, I am greatly afflicted. I said in my alarm, all men are liars. What shall I render to the Lord for all his benefits towards me? I shall lift up the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. I shall pay my vows to the Lord. Oh, may it be in the presence of all his people. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his godly ones. Oh, Lord, surely I am your servant. I am your servant, the son of your handmaid. You have loosed my bonds. To you I shall offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving and call upon the name of the Lord. I shall pay my vows to the Lord. Oh, may it be in the presence of all his people, in the courts of the Lord's house, in the midst of you, O Jerusalem. Praise the Lord.
What was that again?
Psalm 116. That is 116. The song of the patron and the client, or the client to the patron. That's faithfulness. What's faithfulness? In this psalm, it's, I will call upon the name of the Lord. I will praise him. It's 3 a.m. and my patron wants bread. Praise him. I will make him bread because he saved my soul from death. You want me to carry all of this luggage, says the pony? I will do it with a joyful heart because you saved me from Bill Ferney. little picture of us. We're the pony. Any questions, comments, piggybacks, editorials, off-the-wall remarks?
We're not even going to get through the deadline.
Yeah, what's
that
our time?
Yeah, we have 14 minutes left.
All right.
Yeah. Well, then move along.
That was a good round. that was an excellent round right there.
Well, you know what?
One does not simply walk into Mordor.
There you go. Sam was chewing an apple thoughtfully. He had a pocket full of them, a parting present from Nob and Bob. Apples for walking and a pipe for sitting.
I love that little proverb.
I do too.
Yeah.
Apples for walking and a pipe for sitting, he said, but I reckon I'll miss them both for before long. The hobbits took no notice of the inquisitive heads that peeped out of the doors or popped over walls and fences as they passed. But as they drew near to the further gate, Frodo saw a dark, ill-kept house behind a thick hedge, the last house in the village. In one of the windows, he caught a glimpse of a sallow face with sly, slanting eyes, but it vanished at once. So that's where the southerner is hiding, he thought. He looks more than half like a goblin. Mm. And over the hedge, another man was staring boldly. He had heavy brown brows, heavy black brows, and dark, scornful eyes. His large mouth curled in a sneer. He was smoking a short black pipe. And he took it out of his mouth and spat.
What a foul individual.
Morning, Longshanks, he said. Off early. Found some friends at last. Strider nodded, but did not answer. That's grace right there, Bubba. He is withholding his judgment, Strider is. Morning, my little friends, he said to the others. I suppose you know who you've taken up with. That stick it not Strider, that is. Though I've heard of other names not so pretty. And watch out tonight. And you, Sammy, don't go ill-treating my poor old pony. Pah! He spat again. Sam turned quickly. And you, Fernie, he said. You put your ugly face out of sight, or it will get hurt. And with a sudden flick, quick as lightning, an apple left his hand and hit Bill square on the nose. He ducked too late, and curses came from behind the hedge. Waste of a good apple, Sam said regretfully, and strode on.
I love that.
Wrecked.
Oh, yes. Man. You better check yourself.
Yes.
Because Sam, hey, he's a little guy. And this guy, you don't mess with him. He's quick as lightning. He's throwing apples, man.
Yeah.
I just see that. Oh, man. Yeah. And put Bill Fernie in his place.
How fast can a hobbit throw an apple? Let's be honest.
Quick as lightning. If it's our buddy Sam.
There you go.
Mike, are we at near the south gate of Bree right now?
Yes, we are.
All right. At last, they left the village behind. The escort of children and stragglers that had followed them got tired and turned back to the south gate. What'd they get tired of? The spectacle?
Yeah. Of being watched like they were on some sideshow.
No. What the villagers and the children that they just stop. Forget this. They get tired of it.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
Passing through, they kept on along the road for some miles. It bent to the left, curving back to its eastward line as it rounded the feet of Bree Hill, and then it began to run swiftly downward into wooded country. There, or to their left, they could see some of the houses and hobbit holes of Staddle, and on the gentler eastern slopes of the hill. On the gentler, whatever. And I love that because you can see that in-game, in Lotro. Yep. Down in a deep hollow away north of the road, there were wisps of rising smoke that showed where Coom lay. Archit was hidden in the trees beyond. We have finally left Bree.
Finally.
After many episodes.
Mm-hmm.
A couple, huh? A few?
Yeah, a little bit.
So after the road had run on down some way and had left Bree Hill standing tall and brown behind, they came on a narrow track that led off toward the north. This is where we leave the open and to take cover, said Strider. Not a shortcut, I hope, said Pippin. Our last shortcut through woods nearly ended in disaster.
Ah, but you had not got me with you then,
laughed Strider.
My cuts, short or long, don't go wrong. That's a bold statement, but hey,
hey,
he's Strider.
He's the king you're
talking
about.
Yeah, he is. He took a, he took a nap. He took a look up and down the road. No one was in sight, and he led the way quickly.
He took a nap.
He took a nap. He took a look up and down the road. No one was in sight. No one was in sight, and he led the way quickly down towards the wooded valley. His plan, as far as they could understand it, without knowing the country, was to go toward Archet at first, but to bear right and pass it on the east, and then to steer as straight as he could over the wildlands to Weathertop Hill. In that way they would, if all went well, cut off a great loop of the road, which further bent southwards to avoid Midwater marshes. But of course they would have to pass through the marshes themselves. Strider's description of them was not encouraging. And later we find out.
Hey, at least he doesn't lead them on.
Yeah.
Ah, it's no problem. No biggie.
And they eventually get to Midgewater Marshes. The marshes were bewildering. Skipping ahead. The marshes were bewildering and treacherous, and there was no permanent trail even for rangers to find through their shifting quagmires.
Oh,
the
listen.
Flies. Are those the Knickerbreakers?
You can hear something.
That's something like
them. It's something.
The flies began to torment them, and the air was full of clouds of tiny midges that crept up their sleeves and breeches and into their hair. "I'm being eaten alive," cried Pippin. "Midge water. There are more midges than water." What do they live on if they can't get hobbit?" asked Sam, scratching his neck. They spent a miserable day in this lonely and unpleasant country. Their camping place was damp, cold, uncomfortable, and the biting insects would not let them sleep. There were also abominable creatures haunting the reeds and tussocks that, from the sound of them, were evil relatives of the cricket. There were thousands of them, and they squeaked all around, "Neek, breek, breek, neek," unceasingly all night until the hobbits were nearly frantic. The next day, the fourth, was a little better, and the night was almost as comfortless. Though the Knickerbreakers, as Sam called them, had been left behind, the midges still pursued them. I don't like swampy areas, and I sympathize with these guys.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. J.R.R. Tolkien stated that the name Midgewater Marshes was a translation of Icelandic Mævatn, or whatever, which appears in Hrafnir's saga. Nice. I can't speak Icelandic. Hrafnkel's saga or something. So anyway,
that
he borrowed that. I love that.
Culturally insensitive.
Hey, no. I don't even know if they have a culture.
Huzzah!
I'm sorry that they spell funny.
It's not my fault.
As Frodo lay tired but unable to close his eyes, it seemed to him that far away, there came a light in the eastern sky. It flashed and faded many times. It was not the dawn, for that was still some hours off. "What is the light?" he said to Strider, who had risen and was standing, gazing ahead into the night. "I do not know," Strider answered. "It is too distant to make it out. It is like lightning that leaps from the hilltops." And Frodo lay down again, but for a while he could still see the white flashes, and against the tall figure of Strider, standing silent and watchful. At last, he passed into an uneasy sleep.
"You need say no more.
Yeah, okay.
We best get a move on. There are still goblins about."
"Oh, bother. More mountains?"
"No. Don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond."
I believe that you were correct, Brendan, when you first, you prophesied.
Yeah.
You're a prophet. You prophesied that we would end at the flashes coming from Weathertop Way. And that's where we're going.
Well, no, that wasn't me. I think that was Micah. I thought we'd get a little bit further.
I thought it was a general consensus, but no.
Oh, no.
Well, it is, because that's where
it
we're
is now.
Gandalf said we have to stop.
We need to say no more.
I think what we have covered in this chapter so far, we learned a lot of things. And we experienced a lot in this. It just keeps going from bad to worse.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a little ray of sunlight come in, and then bad, bad, bad. You would think that people would give up and go back home. But Frodo and Sam and Pippin and Merry, they aren't giving up. Oh, they'd like to. You know, they do entertain that thought. Who wouldn't? Right? Mm-hmm. But they keep going. Brendan, are you still enjoying this journey?
Oh, yeah.
Do you enjoy it more and more as we go along?
I enjoy it more and more. And more specifically, I enjoy how varied it is. It's not just action-packed chase scenes. It's not just six pages describing a tree branch. It's several things all together.
Perfectly married.
Yeah, practically perfect.
Practically perfect in every way. Yes.
Okay, so that tree line branch. I told some friends that I was doing a Tolkien podcast about Lord of the Rings. And a couple of them shook their heads like, Brendan, I don't know how you can do it. Tolkien wrote about six pages describing a tree branch. I don't know how you can do it, man.
What was your response?
I was like, well, I'm sure he had a reason for it. I'm going to find out what it is.
The reason was that it makes it a better book.
What you said.
It draws us into the story. I was listening to Peter Kraft again last night. His lecture. His lecture, Christianity in the Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And talking about, hey, you know what? Middle Earth itself is one of the main characters in this book. And we don't, when we read about these fantastic things, it doesn't push us away. It draws us in. And so the description of the countryside and Tolkien's skill at using the English language, amongst all the other languages that he had skill of using, he's painting this picture that just draws us in. I feel bad. I really do. And I don't mean this in a condescending way. I feel bad for people that don't enjoy Tolkien. I feel bad for the people that have only watched the films. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really do, because you're missing out on so much more. So much more. And that is what we're here to do on the Secret Fire podcast. And we're glad that you are joining us on this journey. And, you know, we didn't get any feedback again this week. So either one of two things, we're either doing a terrible job or we're doing a good job. That's the only time that you hear from people.
I think we're doing a good job.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm biased.
But my
opinion is subjective.
Well, so. And I wanted to do this show purely for personal reasons.
Yeah.
I mean,
there you go.
Because I just wanted to do the show. So anyway, no listener feedback, but we'll give you all the ways to contact us here in just a minute. One item from the party tree that I want to let everybody listen, or all of our listeners know, is that Secret Fire Podcast is now on Twitch. I set up an account for us. I haven't got it. Huh?
Oh, we weren't streaming it.
Streaming it today because I haven't got it all dialed in. But hopefully next week we will be broadcasting the show from our twitch.tv/secretfirepodcast.
So, awesome. We're a video game now.
Yeah.
Well, we are doing Lotros.
Well, that's
something
that I'm actually thinking of doing. And if any listeners out there are interested in, I'm actually thinking of doing a walkthrough of Lord of the Rings. We have a lot of listeners at Lord of the Rings Online.
Oh, that would be a long walkthrough.
A lot of people, many of our listeners do not play LOTRO, Lord of the Rings Online, but are interested in enough, maybe they would want to watch a 15, 20, 30-minute long video. I'll create a new character and just start from the beginning of the game and walk them through. This is how we play, and this is what we do, and those types of things. So I was thinking of doing that on that page of ours. If you have any interest, let me know. That way I can actually have Micah come in and sit right where he is with his computer, and we can both play it at the same time and do walkthroughs with folks. Would you like to watch some of that, Brendan? Because you don't get to see Micah. Like,
yeah, I don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah, he can't see Micah's computer. Yeah. He's looking at the back of his computer. So anyway, that's
nice
our party
Fallout
tree.
Sticker.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Anyway, what's next week, Brendan?
Well, we got to finish the chapter, I guess. Knife of the Dark Part 2.
Do you think we'll finish?
I don't know. Because in my mind, we're behind schedule, so I don't know now.
Yeah, we are.
But it
we
could
had
be,
planned on being further
you
along.
You said, yeah. like, 3. I was like, no. But now I'm like, well, at the rate we're
well,
going,
at
maybe.
At the rate we're going, yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Then again, we had a lot to talk about this
Oh, section. So are you saying that we need to do Part 2 of A Knife in the Dark?
Yeah, we're doing Part 2 next
week. Oh, okay. Yes. Hey, the Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 1:30 p.m. You know, watchers right now, viewers, are saying, but it's Friday. So,
yeah.
let me repeat that. The Secret Fire Podcast is live each Saturday, Lord willing, at about 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. You can join us for live video, I would say, on our Facebook page, but it may be next week on our Twitch page. But you need to be friends with us on Facebook anyway to keep up on news. Facebook.com/Secret Fire Podcast.
And you can join us on the Arkenstone server and Lord of the Rings Online at LOTRO.com.
To find out more about the Secret Fire Podcast, as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema and the Theonauts, visit our main website at GCTNetwork.com.
You can send us an email at secretfire@gctnetwork.com, or you can call the Hobbit hotline. I don't know who's going to answer since Fatty Bulger has flown the coop.
What are we going to do?
Maybe a ringwraith will answer.
hey, call in and find out.
A thin and menacing voice, of course, at 507-407-GCTN, or the emergency backup line back at Bree, I guess, Butterbur. We could put him.
We'll put him in charge.
Let's give him a job.
Bob or Knob?
That would
call
be perfect.
Bob and Knob at
507-407-4286. Now, let's say you want to tweet at us on the Twitter.
In the Twitter sphere.
Yes. You can follow us at twitter.com/secretfirecast. But let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
You can go to iTunes. You can go to Google Play Music. You can go to Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatcher and search them all for the Secret Fire Cast.
Yes, and our, no, Secret Fire Podcast.
Our
theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle Earth by Brobdignagian Bards. And we're going to play another track off of that album next week, I do believe, or our next episode. Find out more about them and buy CDs, digital downloads, everything by visiting their website at thebards.net. And until next time, we regret to tell you...
This is the end. I'm going away. I'm leaving. Now, goodbye.
Goodbye!
Bye!
It was tied to Bill Fernie.
Doesn't make sense. Wouldn't get very far.
Bling blow. Ooh, chain on skateboard, Pete.
No. That's my wee lad, Gimli.
Huzzah!
Huzzah!
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission.
This is your Great Commission transmission
at GCTNetwork.com.